Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. A story offering a not super simple solution to solve our water crisis is receiving blowback. Plus, we quiz each other on the state of Salt Lake women via news blurbs. Executive producer Emily Means is here to break down the stories of the week. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Good morning, Emily Means. Before we get into the news of the week, we have to do a quick membership pitch.
Yeah! Become a member!
It's fun. We're doing a fun run this Sunday morning. We can't tell you where because it's only for CityCast Salt Lake members. It filled up in half a day, which says a lot of things to me. It says that maybe people like hanging out with us. It also says that our membership program is full of really engaged, really fun people who like doing stuff together. And I just want to say we hear you. We want to follow your lead on that. The other thing about becoming a member is that you get ad-free listening. You get kind of like special little emails from us. We did a special holiday gift guide just for members last year. Ivana made members a Valentine's Day playlist that I'm still listening to when I'm cooking.
So sweet.
But the biggest thing is that you sustain our work for a long time. That's the reason you should become a member. Everything else is just bonus. If you like listening to this show, if these roundups help you feel more connected to the Wasatch Front and to each other without having to spend hours every day consuming news, then a couple bucks a month keeps us in business.
Great pitch, Allie. Go to membership.citycast.fm. That's where you can choose the level at which you become a member, and we can't wait for you to join us.
Choose your own adventure. We'll see you on the other side. Okay. We've got a story about so many things to talk about this week. It's a story about media. It's a story about food. It's a story about water. It's Leah Larson in the Salt Lake Tribune, and the headline is, "A Simple Change Could Save the West from Drought." And before we get into what this simple change is and the backlash to that, I think we should just talk a little bit about why we need to save the West from drought, because we've had a pretty good winter. Last year was an incredible winter. We get these emails from the state every week with an update on our water, and our reservoirs are looking good. Mm-hmm. The lake's risen a couple feet. So you couldn't fault people for being like, well, aren't we kind of like on the journey to repair? Aren't we like climbing out of a drought?
Right. I think it's just luck. Yeah. These past couple of years, because, I mean, before this, we've been in a drought for 20 years, right? Yeah. And this isn't just a Utah thing. As you said, Allie, this is a regional thing for the Western United States. Mm-hmm. And we need long-term solutions and not just to rely on the good graces of Mother Nature to fill the lake and build up our snowpack.
And while our reservoirs might be looking good, the Colorado River, the mighty Colorado, is still in a very bad way. We share that water with our neighboring states, and we're also the third driest state in the country. So water, like, kind of will always be a bit of a crisis for us. And what we're dealing with here is not year-to-year drought. So year-to-year numbers, they're good, they're bad, like, we should be talking about them. But the West, which, like, you know, we're not an island, we're just a state, is dealing with long-term aridification, not just year-to-year drought. So to your point, Emily, like, we need to be thinking past the start and end of our snow year.
Right.
So with that.
And couple that with the explosive growth we've seen in this state, mm-hmm. right? So keep all of this in the back of your mind as we talk about Leah's story, which, Allie, you didn't mention the second part of this headline.
I know, I did that on purpose. It's called burying the lead, boss.
Ah, you dirty rat. The headline is, a simple change could save the West from drought. You probably won't like it. And, Allie, this is... That framing, right? That framing was a real choice. So let's talk about that simple change. The simple change is to eat less beef and dairy. And yeah. Leah talked to a researcher who studies agricultural water use. We know that in Utah, ag is our biggest water user. It's something like 75% of our water goes to agriculture in this state. And 45% of that goes to a specific crop, which is alfalfa.
Not to be confused with the Little Rascals character.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're talking about hay here, okay? And in the Colorado and Salt Lake basins, which is where we are, water use has increased as a result of us producing more alfalfa. And the reason we're doing that, Allie, is to feed dairy cows. We are eating so much freaking cheese, and that might be my fault.
Yeah, we should say, like, two-thirds of this cow farming, this cow production, animal husbandry that we're doing along the Colorado River is beef. One-third is dairy. So I am inclined to throw myself on the pyre here and be like, it's us, it's the cheese people, right? Like, here I am, I drink almond milk, so I think I'm kind of absolved, but then I put cheese on every single meal. Like, I probably eat cheese 3 times a day. I have friends who pop lactose pills, like it's their job, even though their body is like, stop making me eat cheese. And they're like, no, I will persist. Like, we are a little bit the problem, but dairy is only a third of that. Two-thirds of those cows we're just slicing and dicing and making burgers out of that we're selling at McDonald's for like under a dollar, which just simply doesn't math. Absolutely nothing in this country really costs under a dollar.
Right. And especially if we're thinking about the long-term investments we're now having to make in our water infrastructure as a result of this water-intensive crop that we grow here in the state.
Right. Alfalfa is a thirsty, thirsty crop.
Indeed. And so, Allie, I mean, like, this is a tough sell to, I think, Americans in particular. Right? Like, we're not going to give up our beef burgers. We're not going to give up our charcuterie boards. You know, some people still drink a glass of milk with every meal. That is not me. I haven't done that in a really long time, but
I like a latte. I'll say it. An almond milk latte is simply not the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, you know, Governor Spencer Cox's response to this story, he simply retweeted with the caption, "No thanks."
So petulant. Is it just me or has he been pettier since he launched Disagree Better? I do feel like he was like very, I don't know. It just feels like timed with the launch of his Disagree Better initiative, where he's like kind of lecturing all of us about how we should be like kinder and more like open to debate. Every time the Salt Lake Tribune is like, here's an idea from a researcher, he's like, boo,
go away. Stink.
And it's like baseline, that kind of frightens me because in terms of our water use, the federal government has told Western states, listen, all y'all who use Colorado River water, you need to figure your shit out. And if you don't, we're going to come in and figure it out for you. So this is the man who's kind of tasked with like negotiating with other states how we reimagine our water use 50, 100 years into the future. And when a reporter talks to a researcher who's like, well, we could do this, he looks at that and goes, no thanks.
Mm-hmm. And we cannot forget that our governor is an alfalfa farmer, Allie.
Correct.
Like, we gotta tuck that into the back of our mind when we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
But I think that the response to this was unfair to Leah, first of all. Don't shoot the messenger, my friends, okay?
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, the top line here from the researcher is we basically need to help farmers transition to other crops that do not use as much water. And I don't know that that's really a conversation that our government is having, Allie. Like, we are talking about optimizing farmers' watering systems in the state. The legislature even passed bills this year to do that, to like further help farmers use less water. But I don't know that they're like, yeah, let's grow less alfalfa.
Right. Well, and that's the one of the interesting things that was pointed out in this story is that, yes, in the past however many years, we are using less acreage to farm, but our water use for irrigating farmland has still gone up. And that's because we're growing such thirsty crops. So the water optimization can only do so much if we're not optimizing the literal crop that we're growing, right? Mm-hmm. The simultaneous to getting this story, we got one of those, you know, I love them, emails from like, well, it wasn't Wallet Hub this time, it was Lawn Starter, where it's like our daily ranking of like Utah's the number one state for whatever, like, you know, being in a relationship or the worst state for whatever. Utah is fifth in the nation for our average water use per irrigated acre of farmland. So like we're the third driest, but we're the fifth for using the most water to irrigate our crops. So again, like we don't have any choice but to be having these conversations. And the conversation can't just be boiled down to, I want to keep eating beef, move it along. Mm-hmm. The thing that really stuck out to me here, Emily, and I think it's a problem that we face nationally, but I really feel it here locally, especially in election years, which we should remember our governor is in one right now. We have a romanticized view of farming. And like when you hear politicians in the state and leaders in the state talk about farms in Utah, it's very E-I-E-I-O. Like it's very like man with a pitchfork and six cows, like waking up at the crack of dawn, pouring a cup of Folgers and like tilling his own soil. And the reality is like, most farming in this nation is factory farming. It is industrialized. It is like, it doesn't look like that. And it hasn't for a really long time. And by a really long time, I mean like 100 years. And so we practice this agricultural exceptionalism where it's like every other industry is subject to scrutiny. Every other lifestyle, every other whatever is subject to regulation or radical rethinking. But we just never touch ag. To say farmers are crushing it. They're not. That's part of the problem, right? Like the subsidization of farms is bananas.
I wish I could speak to this more, Allie. I am just a simple city girl. And, you know, I think a big issue that we've had in this conversation around water has been the, you know, urban versus rural, you know, we're pointing fingers. It's all the farmers' fault. And it's hard to move past that. And I do think, though, if we're going to make strides to, you know, continue to live in in this state as our water dries up, we have to have these hard conversations. And it can't just be a romantic vision of, you know, a Brigham City farmer in the back of Spencer Cox's campaign video or whatever it is.
Right.
So, yeah, we need to be able to have these difficult conversations. And I think it's on our elected officials to lead those conversations and not just shut them down as soon as one single reporter from our local newspaper puts the idea on the table.
Yeah. Did you see the Utah Business story this week about Ballerina Farm and agritourism?
No, tell me more.
Okay. So basically, Ballerina Farm is like this former ballerina turned influencer who moved her family to Camas and is now like they're running a quote unquote working farm and opening it up to agritourism, which is basically like, you can go and pick pumpkins there. Like you can go and visit the farm and it almost like make a field trip of like watching farming. And I'm kind of trying to figure out where that story fits into Leah's story about like the way that we romanticize farming. Because I'm like, on the one hand, I think it's cool for us to have a relationship with the food that we grow. Like there are lots of local organizations like the Food Justice Coalition in Salt Lake City that are asking us to think about that. But at the same time, it also kind of pushes forward the romanticization of farming.
Yeah.
In the story, they talk about how, like, you know, every morning they go milk the, like, family cow whose name is Tulip. And it's like, right. But when I buy milk at Harmon's, like, it's simply not Tulip's milk, right? Yeah. So it's like, is it healing this divide, or is it actually further, like, extracting us from the reality? And is it making it even more of a class issue? Like, I don't know. Food for thought. No pun intended. But I'll link the Utah business story in the episode notes here if you want, as sort of like further reading on all this.
Allie, are you going to eat less cheese?
I don't want
to. I don't want to eat.
It's like Cox, Governor Cox says, no thanks. But here I am being like, I don't want to.
I know.
Are they different? Is that different?
That's the thing. Like, are we hypocrites? Maybe. I don't know. It is also, you know, you bring this up a lot, actually. I like to shame people for watering their lawns at inappropriate times during the summer. And you've pointed out that that's not really helpful. And asking people to stop eating cheese or to eat less cheese, I have to wonder, like, what kind of long-term impacts will that have for us in the grand scheme of the burning of this earth? And maybe that's just me deflecting because I am not going to stop making my charcuterie boards, okay?
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Okay, Emily, it is Women's History Month, and something I feel like we're talking a lot about in this state constantly is the state of Utah women. And one of the reasons for that is that consistently, year after year, we are ranked dead last for women's equality. This, like, same study comes out every year, and every year the Fox 13 runs the headline and it makes the rounds. And I think, like, when we think about the state of women in Utah, the data can just be really disheartening.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that this is a solution to that, but I thought that we could tackle some recent local news stories related to women, some fantastic, some kind of disheartening, in the form of a quiz. So I made you a quiz.
You know what? I think you have a future ahead of you as, like, a Jeopardy host or something.
If you think that's not my dream career, Emily Means.
Move over, Ken Jennings.
All I want to do is look over my shoulder at someone and say, you are the weakest link. Goodbye. Okay, let's start at the beginning, as Maria says. Question one, Emily Means. According to Forbes, National Business Magazine, the pay gap between men and women in Utah is currently the blank largest in the nation. This is a fill-in-the-blank question. You guess.
This one I know because I read the story. It's the third largest pay gap in the nation.
Correct.
Third worst.
Yeah.
Right?
Worst or
They're
largest.
The same. Synonyms.
Yeah. I guess in this case, yeah. Third largest pay gap in the nation. Yuck.
No good. Can we very briefly dig into this, Allie? Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny that you were like, every single year we get a story about how bad women's equality is in Utah. And that is true. We also get this story every year that is, the pay gap between men and women in Utah is so freaking bad.
Yeah.
And so because of that, you know, you've got people every year, usually men, who are like, well, that's because Utah women choose to be mothers and leave the workforce. It's their choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's their calling. But There's research that asks, is this really a choice, especially given our childcare crisis, Allie?
Right.
Like, we have a lot of large families in this state. Someone's got to take care of these kids. The burden usually falls to the women of the family because we only have 35% of the childcare resources to meet the need in this right. state. So
I made the mistake sitting on an airplane of reading the comments on the Instagram post that Fox 13 posted with this data point. And it was so many men being like, well, that's because women do low-paying things like nurse or be teachers. Which, yeah. like, first of all, those just should not be low-paying. Those are two of the hardest jobs out there. But I think that the subtext of that view is that, like, Utah women are less ambitious. And I just want to remind people that in terms of who in this state graduates with a bachelor's degree, it is more women than men. Utah women are incredibly ambitious. And not that they should even need to be to earn the same amount for the same work as men, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is not happening.
Like, which is not happening.
People forget this metric. It is not happening.
It is not happening. So if you're like dying to know, the two states that are worse than us are Wyoming and New Hampshire. It's also important to note this data has not been disaggregated. So this is like women on average, which probably means that it's skewing more white women and white men. It doesn't take into account pay gaps for trans women, for black women. So, like, we know that as you start to disaggregate data, it gets even more exploratory. So, yeah. Okay. Let's move on to question number two. You're going to like this one.
Let's do it.
Which of the following items is subject to state sales tax in Utah? A, Viagra. B, tampons, or C, haircuts?
This one I love because you're always shaking your fist at this particular issue. Is it tampons?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No state sales tax on Viagra or haircuts, but yes, we still pay a state sales tax on tampons. It feels like every year at the legislative session, someone tries to overturn this tax, and it just never happens.
And why? What is it about?
I don't get it.
I don't know. And we have made some strides around period equality in this state. I'm seeing more and more bathrooms, you know, even like among private companies, just offering pads and tampons.
Love seeing that.
I love that. But I'm also seeing, and maybe this is, you know, it's legislators from this generation that are preventing this from happening. Mm-hmm. You know those old tampon dispensers on the wall that are from like 1970? I see so many of those even still.
Dude, I was one time at the Salt Lake Airport and a woman was, I think this was before the redesign, a woman was in the bathroom and she like needed something from one of the old dispensers.
Yeah.
And she was like asking all the other people in the bathroom, does anyone have a quarter?
A quarter?
And I was like, God help us.
No one has a quarter and no one wants to use a 40-year-old tampon, okay, from a public bathroom.
I was like, I've got a tampon. Like, here you go. But like, I cannot believe like we ask people to find a quarter. It's so crazy. Yeah, no, I mean, we could rant about this
That's
all day, but I just think it's an important reminder. And shout out to every business that does put tampons in their bathroom. I see you, and it is so appreciated.
Yeah.
Okay, question three. You went to this game. Last Saturday, the Utah Royals women's soccer team played the Chicago Red Stars at America First Stadium in Sandy. This was the quote-unquote return of royalty, the Utah Royals National Women's Soccer League, our local team. They have been gone in Kansas City for a while, related to rampant sort of sexual harassment claims and whatever. When they left, it was things were bad. Now they have new ownership, Ryan Smith, owner of the Utah Jazz. Their home opener, Emily, did you see this? It was the largest crowd for any women's sporting event ever in the state of Utah.
Hell yeah.
More than 20,000 fans showed up to watch this game. 20,300 people. Do you know what seating capacity is at the Delta Center for a Jazz game?
Yes. Wait, is this what you're quizzing me on? Seating capacity for...
Oh, okay. This is a... Sorry, it's like the New York Times Daily Mini. This is the mini inside.
Okay.
The-
Is it like 19,000 people or something?
It's 20,000.
Okay.
So imagine a full jazz game at the Delta Center. That is how many people showed up in Sandy to watch these two teams play soccer, these two women's teams. Here's the question. BYU women's soccer coach Jennifer Rockwood runs one of the nation's best college soccer programs. Between the two teams, the Utah Royals and the Chicago Stars, on the field on Saturday, how many players had been coached by Jennifer Rockwood in college? Is it 3, 4, or 5?
That's a great question, Allie. I know that there were some former BYU players, at least on the Royals. I'm going to go with 5.
Yes.
Yeah?
It's 5. 5.
Damn. Good program, then.
Incredible program. Shout out to her. Of course, the Royals lost. We're like, we save that to the end.
Oh, yeah.
But then the Royals lost.
In that case, burying the lead was okay. But yeah. It was a fun time, Allie, and there were so many girls there. And I also went to a jazz game this week, which we'll talk about later on. But when the camera pans through the audience, I don't know. It was just refreshing to see so many women, so many girls at this game versus the jazz game, which is, you know, all the boys who are, you know, junior jazz or whatever. And it's important to have spaces for kids to play and, like, see themselves represented. And that's why I think everyone should go to the Royals games. It's a great time.
I just want to say, if while I was asking Emily that question, you were screaming the answer at your steering wheel or, like, I don't know, at the sidewalk while you're walking your dog, there is women's sports trivia this Thursday at 7 p.m. at HK Brewing, which is formerly Hans Kombucha in the ballpark neighborhood. And it's going to be really fun. So you should go to women's sports trivia night this Thursday. I'll put link in the episode notes. Okay, this is your last question, Emily.
Okay.
You made it to the end. True or false, all LDS women skipped church this past Sunday as part of a national boycott?
I think it has to be false because on a technicality because all is a lot.
Yes. Yes.
But tell me more about this. I haven't read this story. Thank
it's
you.
It's false.
Yeah.
Not all but some. That's the kind of thing we fact check, okay? Not all but some. So this Sunday, past Sunday, March 17th, it all started, I think this is so interesting because I'm also just, I love all forms of protest. I gotta say, like, I think it's
you
great.
Radical.
It's how we show love for our nation or institutions that we care about. On Sunday, a woman named Kirsten Creamer Howes, she had written this editorial. She's actually in Seattle, but she had written this op-ed a couple months ago and then kind of pushed it again last week that said, to bring attention to the struggles of women in our church, what they're experiencing, including myself, I'm not going to church on Sunday. My husband's going. I'm going to sit it out. She says she selected that particular day because it will be the 182nd anniversary of the founding of the Relief Society.
Okay, the women's group.
Which is basically the women's group. Mm-hmm. Think silos with wheat on them. That's the Relief Society kind of symbol. It is the women's group, but it's also like the kind of charitable core of the church. And I love this turn of phrase. She says, I'm selecting this day. It's the 102nd anniversary of the founding of the Relief Society. And if any group in our church deserves some relief, it's the women.
Nice.
So there's a couple things going on. And of course, I'm not a church expert. I'm not a member of the church. I know that last year women leaders were removed from the stand at church. But I think that this is a really, you know, in terms of the intersection of the formerly predominant, still significant religion in our state, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and Utah being ranked dead last for women's equality year after year, I love to see protests and resistance within an institution like the church. I think that's cool.
Of course. I am curious. I mean, we've got the church's general conference coming up in April. I'm not sure if it's at the beginning of April, but I wonder how they'll address this topic, this protest, if at all.
Okay, let's do some shout-outs and get out of here. Thanks for playing, Emily.
That was fun, Allie.
You get 100 million points.
I got 100% on that quiz, I think.
You did get 100% on that quiz.
Yeah. A dub for Women's History Month.
Yeah, that's right. Yet another score. Okay, you go first. I've been talking a lot.
Okay. My shout out is to John Collins, who is a player for the Utah Jazz. And I mentioned I went to the game this week, Allie, when the Jazz played the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Minnesota's star player, Anthony Edwards, dunked on John Collins's head in the most spectacular fashion. It's being hailed as one of the greatest dunks of all time. The dunk heard round the world. And so my shout out is to poor John Collins, who came away injured, no concussion. That's good. But, you know, this guy's going to have to see a poster of himself getting dunked on for the rest of his life. So
he's having a rough few weeks, too, because you and I were at the Jazz game together where he choked the Chicago Bulls assistant coach.
Wait a minute. Okay. Did he choke the coach or did the coach choke him?
No, he choked the coach. He had his hand around the coach's neck.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
That's my shout out. You go, John Collins.
Yeah, I like that
Allie,
guy.
What's your shout out?
Okay, my shout out is to the Sun Trap. The Sun Trap, iconic, historical, revolutionary queer bar in Salt Lake City, opened in 1991. According to reporting from Q Magazine, it has officially forfeit its bar license, to which I say, diva down. This is so sad to hear. I gotta say, so in January, the Trap temporarily closed. They had weird open and closure dates since then. Their phone number was disconnected. No real updates on social media. Now someone from the DABS, the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services, confirms they did forfeit their license. That license will probably be given to one of the many bars waiting in the wings for a bar license at the next DABS meeting. Mm-hmm. The Trap has been through it. In recent years, there was new ownership. There was drama with that. There's just been a lot. There have been a lot of claims that, in recent years, it hasn't felt as much like a queer bar anymore. The space has been kind of co-opted by straight people who want to take on the dance floor.
Freaking straight.
However you feel about the Trap's, recent career, long may she reign. I think this is really sad that it's closing, and Salt Lake only has a limited number of queer bars, and I hate this, but shout out to the Trap. So many good memories there. Such an important part of our city's history.
Yeah, she had a good run for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right, speaking of a good run, let's you and I get out of here. Have a great day, Emily.
Have a great day, Allie.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Take good care.